Chapter 4. We just want to review real quickly where we're at. The first lesson we looked at just chapter 1, where we find that Nehemiah hears about the conditions of the walls in Jerusalem. It's been 100 years since the exiles have returned. The temple's been rebuilt, but the walls are still in disrepair. And we know that a city without walls has no protection, and it's subject to any enemy coming in. And so you can't really have any commerce or anything going on because, well, you're just a really a nothing city. And so he has this real burden, and he spends all this time in prayer. Then he asks the king for authority to go fix the walls in Israel, and he gets given permission. So some lessons, really. When we have a real problem, just sit down and cry. I mean, that's the way it should be. If you have a passion for something that's wrong, take it to God and pray about it. Pray. And then it's interesting. He said, I'm a cupbearer. Well, he had a relationship with the king that gave him opportunity to ask for help. Go ahead and exercise your opportunities, right? Take advantage of them. But then at least just do something, okay? So then the next lesson, we see that he gets to Jerusalem and he surveys the wall by night by himself, comes up with a plan, sells that plan to others. He invites others to join him. So we learned some lessons. You got to know what has to be done and then get other people on board. Now, will everyone work with you on any given subject or topic?
No.
So you got to invite those that will work, and we'll see that there were some naysayers at the beginning, and we're going to see that opposition more today. And so he invited others. Now, what was really interesting, chapter 3, the priests, the religious leaders, the high priests, they started. They're mentioned first. They joined the work. And then whole families are included. You know, a man with his daughters and people of various trades, a perfumer. And so the lesson is there something for everyone to do on a task like this? And another lesson is if you want to get success, get everyone involved. And every family and even the children of the family. And that's how they were successful there.
It also involved everybody by their social status. He was wise enough to include them in their own social group and their own unit.
Exactly.
And then when other people saw them working, that had an effect on their social units, and they knew that they were all included as a family group, as a unit.
Neat.
The group was provided the strength as a nation. They all
that's right.
Well, we are a city. We can go walls.
And it kind of congealed them again, didn't it? So.
Mm-hmm. Nehemiah went out and learned what he had to do first, as you said. If you don't know what you're doing, don't try to do it.
Yeah.
You're going to cause a problem.
That's right. That's right.
And you have difficulties. The reason why he was so successful is because he had such a great preparatory plan.
That's right. A lot of time in prayer and then assessing and making up a plan. Good. All right, so that brings us to our third lesson will be chapter 4 through 6. We're only going to get through chapter 4 tonight. But here is where opposition shows up. And we're going to just learn a few points. First of all, if you're committed to following Christ and living for Him and doing something of value for Christ, just mark it down, you're going to receive opposition. It's just guaranteed anytime an individual, a family, a church starts making a difference for the Lord, you're going to get people that oppose you. As long as you talk about it, they don't care. But as soon as you start doing something about it, you're going to have problems. And the second thing we'll see is there's going to be a cycle in chapter 4 and 5 of advancement. You're doing really well. And then opposition and a setback, followed by more advancement and then a setback. You would read chapter 3 where it lists all the people that are working. They built this section and this guy built, you know, repaired him and his family, this gate and this, you know, the next group, this section. Sounds like it just went along just lovely, you know, splendidly with no problems. Well, chapter 4 introduces, no, that's not the case. There were lots of problems and there's this cycle of, again, advancing in progress, then setback, progress, then setback. Can you give me the whiteboard, please? All right. And then we're going to see that you overcome opposition, and this is going to sound very simplistic, but it really is just this simple. It's by more prayer followed by more action. That's how they resolved and overcome the opposition. By more prayer, showing trust in God and not in yourselves, followed by more action. Okay, thank you. Let's talk about the wall for a little bit. I said I would do that last week. Yes?
I just think it's important to note there how he's building that trust and care over that 3 to 4 months of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Prayer, 3 to 4 months of trust and care until he goes up beside them and say, let's build this together. You know, leadership is not always a position. He was a cupbearer.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you think of Christ. He didn't have a position. Christ came to the world without a crown in a worldly sense, right? So same thing with Nehemiah being a cupbearer. He wasn't necessarily an authoritative position of leadership, but he was still leading people by taking that inspiration and applying it and making it become reality by influencing others, getting next to them.
That's right. And if you have a passion, you can lead. And that's where he did. He used good. So Hezekiah's wall was a large wall, and then after the city was destroyed, we're going to find that Nehemiah came back, and the wall wasn't as large as the original was as far as the length. But they find in Nehemiah, they fortified Jerusalem unto the broad wall. This broad wall is a reference to one of Hezekiah's wall, and they've uncovered part of it in Jerusalem in the City of David area. And it's about 8 meters thick. That would be what? 24 feet. And about 8 meters high. Is that a broad wall? 24 feet wide and 24 feet tall. And they've uncovered part of it. And that's part of the picture of it. They guess. Because I'll show you some maps of what they think Nehemiah's wall looked like. But it's about 2 miles long. Okay? And it averaged 7 to 11 feet thick. And anywhere from 24 to 30 feet tall. Is this quite an endeavor when you're building a wall here without cranes, without heavy-duty equipment? You're just using manual labor for the most part. They'd had some other tools, but this is quite a project. And remember how many days did it take? 52 days. That's what's the most amazing about it. And then when we're going to see in this chapter, they did it with constant opposition, sometimes fear for their life. That even makes it just more amazing what they did. Okay? So when you look at it, here's probably one of the best pictures of what the wall looked like. And here is the Valley of Hinnom, and that's where we get the idea of Hades from. Here's the Kidron Valley. Here is a bigger picture of it. Here's what they call the City of David. I want to see the gates on them. We've talked about the fish gate, the sheep gate, the ass gate, the horse gate. Those would be the 12 gates around the city. What else can I show you about it? You can go in this pool of Siloam. And right now, I dug on that. You know, they excavated and they found that. That's a beautiful place. And then Hezekiah had an aqueduct, can't even say it. And it's an amazing thing. You get to walk through it. Did you get to walk through it? The two of you. But it's how they got water from outside to inside the wall. And so all these things you can find, and it's just marvelous to go there. News bulletin, there might be a trip to Israel July of 2018. But more information on that later, okay? Here is a picture of also what they might think it looks like. Notice how much longer it is and spread out. The Temple Mount would be there. Here's a picture of what they think Nehemiah's Jerusalem looked like after the wall was built. Okay? Just give you a feel for what it is. Okay? A massive project, though, for refugees, right? People that were left behind, and exiles that come out of Babylon, and they weren't builders. And that's perhaps why it was left 100 years without any defenses. This is a portion of Nehemiah's wall they've actually uncovered, and the top part was built by the Hasmoneans, but this is by the City of David, and you get a feel for the type of stone and what they're using. They weren't the largest stones like Herod's wall was, but they're big stones and they're built in pretty tightly. And if this is 40 feet tall, could you scale that if you're going to attack a city? It'd be very difficult, okay? So there's some picture. Just wanted to get a feel for what the wall was like. And I mentioned there's a cycle here that we're going to see of advance and setback. And chapter 4, you're going to see that. And I'll just give you a chart to show it. So if I don't point it out each time, at least you're mindful of it. But we'll see in chapter 3, it just seems like they're advancing. But now chapter 4 is going to introduce the enemies that are going to try to counter what they're doing. And then verse 4 through 6, advance. 7 and 8, a setback. And you'll see that all the way through here. On this side, the left column, it'd be advances. On the right-hand column, it'd be the setbacks or attempted to set them back in their progress. And so why this is important to point out is we're going to see this stage of planning, right? And that included the prayer, the assessment, and enlisting help. But then there's the day you initiate and work begins. How would you characterize that day for any project you're doing? It's a starting spot, but you've been building or making plans for a house. You got an architect. You finally got a permit. It's taken 6 months to get it stamped, and now you're ready to break ground. That day you break ground, how would you characterize that day? Exciting celebration. Is there a lot of energy in the family? If you're doing a house or a business or whatever it is, it's exciting. Now, so the excitement level is perhaps way up here. Then what happens all the time with that energy level? He goes, and what makes it drop real quick? Problems, right? Now, if you're building a house or a business, or raising kids, what are you going to have? Problems. Now, when you get down here to the finish, when it's complete, how would you characterize that day? I mean, now we're way back up here at 100%. Woo! It's done! I can't believe we did it! You know, and you're so excited. But is there ever the possibility someone here, you quit? That's a lot of projects never get finished because of what happens in the middle.
All depends how strong your leadership is.
Yeah. Has to do with leadership. That's right.
Because they will follow. And the track record of this effort showed me that they followed. And the emotional roller coaster you're talking about may have been more level in my eyes. Mm-hmm. But that's my own observation.
Yeah. But it's in the middle section of work where projects usually fail. They run out of money, they run out of energy, people quit. That's where wars are lost, that's where games are lost. I mean, it's fun to get on the court and it's fun to finish a victor, but here's where the battle's won. And that's what we're gonna see in chapters 4 through 6. It's the grind from the beginning to the end, the middle section. It's true in a marriage, it's true in finances, it's true in health, it's true as a Christian. You start off on fire, and then you're wanting to convert everyone. How many people have that story? You're talking to everybody. But then there's just this, and when I say a grind, it's work. You know, that's why we have that song, Toiling On. And then when you finally get to heaven, is it worth it all? Of course. How sad is it some people quit in the twilight years of their life, right when they're about to receive the reward, they walk away from the faith? Yes. It's harder what?
It's to work and to take part and to make it to church and all those things. It's harder when you get older.
You're saying it gets harder?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. And are we going to argue with her?
I don't know. Oh, I'm not there yet.
That's what I'm going to say. You're not there yet.
I'll let you know.
But is your faith still strong?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But we see people quit, and you just wonder why. So I think that's what we're seeing here in chapters 4 through 6, okay? This cycle, yes?
It seems like in reading through this, when they can't come to the rough spot, he always reminds them who
It's right. It's prayer. That's the first solution always. Okay, so let's read with that thought in mind. Again, chapter 4 and verse 1. Now, it came about when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall. Now, is this at the beginning, perhaps? Or shortly thereafter? Yes. Doesn't say when. He became furious and very angry and mocked the Jew. Now, again, we've noticed because he didn't want to lose his position of power. He didn't want them to be successful. So he spoke in the presence of his brothers, and the wealthy men of Samaria said, "What are these feeble Jews doing?" What do you note, first of all? Feeble Jews. Name calling. He's running them down, okay? Trying to discourage them. Are they going to restore it for themselves? Can they offer sacrifices? Can they finish in a day? Now, what he's suggesting is, you think you're going to get this done? And you're going to be able to finish in a day and worship God? Can they revive the stones from the dusty rubble, even the burned ones? Then what are you going to use for material? Now, we're going to see later, there's so much rubbish, it does present a problem. And the workers are getting exhausted and weary. All right? Now, Tobiah the Ammonite was near him and said, "Why, even what they're building, if a fox should jump on it, it would break the stone wall down." Now, what's that? He's mocking them and shaming them. Now, when you have opposition, does it start usually with fighting and trying to physically resist people? No, usually it's talk. And so that's the first thing we're going to see here. There's this first form of opposition. It comes in mockery. That he's trying to discourage them, and it says he mocked the Jews. And if a fox should jump on it, you know, if this is not going to hold a fox up, what's it going to do with catapults and soldiers and things like that?
He started questioning the quality of the work which they have begun.
Right.
And so you hit him at the very onset that your quality of work would not even hold up anyway.
Ridiculing them. And will that demoralize people and get them to quit? It can. It's effective, and that's why they're doing it. Now, we're going to see that it does not have that effect at all, okay? So what happens? We see in verse 4. Now, it's interesting because it's not like there's a sentence leading up to this, like saying, when Nehemiah heard this, he prayed God. All we have is what? A prayer. Because this is his autobiography, and he just says, we just see him immediately going to God in prayer. "Hear, O our God, how we're despised." Were they despised by those around them? "Return their reproach on their own heads and give them up for plunder in the land of captivity. Do not forgive their iniquity. Do not let their sin be blotted out before you, for they have demoralized the builders." Now, a couple things I want you to note. This is a strong prayer. Let them be plunder. What does that mean?
Destroyed.
When people come in captive, be the things that are hauled off. And when it comes to their sins, don't you forgive a one of them. Now, let me ask you this. Does this sound very Christian? Okay.
Because he's saying, this is your work, God. This is what they're doing to you. He's not taking it personal. He's giving it all to God.
Okay.
And I think that's a real important point here, because he's saying it's you, God, they have provoked.
All right. Because in verse 5, you said what? "Do not forgive iniquity. Let their sin be blotted out before you." They've demoralized the builders.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I'll have to look at that, why it has that in there. But that's fine, okay, because it's more of an attack on God than...
Actually, it's a New King James.
Okay, all right, that makes sense, all right?
It's also
ESV, yeah. But it's interesting, does he acknowledge that their ridicule is having an effect?
Yes.
That's the second thing I want to point out. He said, they have demoralized the builders. But rather than going after the enemy or the opposition, who does he go to? God. Now that's so important because our enemy is not flesh and blood, literally. It's against the spiritual forces of darkness. So how are we going to battle that? Go to God. Go to God. Now it's interesting. A good homework would be for you to look at some of the prayers of righteous men and women, and when they were attacked by God's enemies, and look at the nature of those prayers. They weren't always what we would think very loving, like kill them, slaughter them, wipe them out. Are there some people that hate God and hate God's people, and that's a proper prayer?
Yes.
The answer is going to be yes, all right? Now, be very judicious when you make a prayer like that. You don't do it out of anger, and you make sure you're doing it correctly, okay? Yes, Donna.
They were involved in God's work.
Yes.
And so when they were being demoralized, it was to hinder God's work, not their own.
That's right. Now, Nehemiah's got a little heads up on it because I think obviously he's got God with him and working through him. But Jesus, you know, would be in the same position. What did he say to Peter at one time? Get behind me,
Satan.
Yeah. And he also said in our John letter, if you reject me, you're not really rejecting me. Who are you working against? God himself. Yes.
Also, I'm realizing that this guy, Sambal, was not just talking to his brothers, but he was talking to the guys that were of the army of Samaria.
Yes.
And it makes me question, how were their walls? And did this Jew, these Jews that were living in this broken down city, know of their walls and their fortification and that. And here they were coming up and forcing themselves upon them in this way. And then they didn't add on to that, then the Ammonites. And I'm not for sure the condition of the Ammonites at the time, but how were their walls?
I couldn't answer. That's a good question.
How fortified were they? Mm-hmm. And here Israel's looking to Nehemiah, here the Jews are looking to Nehemiah, and what's Nehemiah going to do? He's got to go to God in prayer.
Yeah. No, that's interesting.
It's interesting. These guys weren't necessarily talking to Jews. The Jews heard it. They were trying to reinforce the army of Samaria.
That's right, and get other people riled up against them, weren't they?
Yeah.
Now, notice the second thing I want you to see then. It's first prayer, and then what? So we what? Get back to work. Where were you? Just get back to work. I mean, the only way they can stop you from building or keep you from finishing the wall is if they get you to quit. Just don't quit. Really?
So they haven't cast any sticks.
Not yet.
They had just thrown stuff. Words.
Good, yeah. Just words right now.
Words were not hurting them.
And did you have... That's proper.
They took their emotional energy and anger and used it constructively. And that's an example of how to be angry and not sin.
That's a good lesson. If you did not hear that, they took their emotional energy and anger and did it constructively. And that's why Paul said, be angry and sin not. They took it to God, and they probably took it out on the wall. Right? Let's get back to work. We'll show them. You know, God's with us and you can have no part in this. Didn't he say that already?
Yeah,
good point. Oh, more?
Anger is a valuable source of energy. If somebody's coming after your kid, that's energy to defend your child.
That's right. That's right. Marvin?
Do we know approximately how many people were involved in building this?
What? No. I don't have an answer to that. How many people, he asked, were involved?
Because if you just take the map, it's about 200 feet a day they have to build.
Yeah, it's quite a bit.
It's a lot.
Yeah. Someone else had their hand up? Yes.
An ancient incentive program.
Yes. Okay, good. All right, so there's the first thing. And what I love is this last phrase, the wall was joined together half its height. Why? Why? Now, I don't know how you develop that. I've read some people say, well, the mind to work is a gift of God. No, I think it's something you develop and you nurture in yourself. And leadership can help develop it. And God perhaps might bless you with the strength and the wisdom, but a mind at work comes from where? Right here. And it's someone that's not afraid of the work. And realize it takes work to get it done. It's not going to build itself. All the talk in the world will not get anything done. Is that true of the church? It takes work, and people that have the mind to do the daily work, and sometimes it's a grind, and there's sometimes not a lot of glory, because when you just put one stone up, and then you put two stones, and the end of the day you have four up, what do you look and see that you've done? Not a lot, right? But it's just one day after another doing the work. Okay, yes.
They had the letters from the king.
Yes.
Nehemiah had that.
Yes.
People were aware of that without question. He's coming to do this work, and even though the ridicule is there, they got a lot of it, but with that, and I think it, like Ann was pointing, Ann Lee.
Yes.
As she was pointing out, I think they took that ridicule, and it frustrated them to the point that, we'll show you.
Could have been.
And they
could have been.
That wall, and they probably built it even better than they probably would have initially done it, but now they've got more of a mind to work to get it done.
All right. Okay. So let's look at the next thing then. Now there's going to be actual resistance, not just words. So when Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabs, the Ammonites, so as John pointed out, now the Ashdodites, he's collecting resistance from without. Okay. They heard the repair of the wall of Jerusalem went on. And the breaches began to be closed. So could they see it when they went by and did their little survey? Oh yeah, the wall's starting to come together. It's not to height yet. Now they're very angry. What does the ESV say there? You know, this is an anger that's boiling from within. It's a strong word.
Very
angry. And now they're conspiring. That's it's interesting. Will people conspire against the people of God? All the time. That's all the Old Testament you see it of. And when you look at Jesus in his ministry, what were they constantly doing? Conspiring against him. Now, who is the chief conspirator?
Satan.
I just always want you to remember, our battle is not against flesh and blood. It's against Satan and his forces, right? Does he use people? Yes. But it's against Satan. That's where the battle is, okay?
Mm-hmm. Their greed that was overtaken them in this anger.
Mm-hmm.
By keeping Jerusalem where they were, they had control of the trades. They had control of the money coming in by the government. They were probably pilfering off the top at the bottom of that money. Would you agree?
Yeah. They don't want that. Yeah, that's right.
There was more at stake here than just how many walls? 10 gates being
12, four, yeah.
12 gates being four. They knew that if they succeeded, they would lose control.
Yeah, it's true. It's about
money.
Political power and money. Yes, that's always seems to be the oil that drives all these things, okay? Now, here it is now to come and fight. See how it's amped up the resistance? It's not just talk about them or demoralize them. It's actually fight and then cause the disturbance. This would be probably terror attacks. You know what I'm saying? We're not going to march on all of Jerusalem, but if you have a terrorist attack on one portion of the wall and some of the family members get killed, what does that do to the rest of the group? Well, that's the purpose of a terrorist attack, is to cause everyone to fall back in fear, okay? Because fear is a huge paralyzer. Did you have your hand up?
Well, I was thinking of 1 Peter, the second chapter, verse 20 and 21. For what credit is it if when you are beaten for your faults, you take it patiently? But when you do good and suffer, if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God. For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that we should follow in his
steps. All right, good. Hey, we're going to get it. It's this middle section. Starting's easy, finishing's fun, but the middle is where the battle's won. The middle, okay? And that's what we're in right here. So now Nehemiah, what does he do? But, see, there's the big transition word. But they're conspiring with all their other neighbors, these other nations. But we went to the King of Kings, the Lord of Hosts, the ones that raises up kings and takes kings down. We went to God Almighty, the Creator. Who's going to win this one? Now, again, how many times, that's the last step I took after I talked to everyone else. I said, well, I think I better pray to God. No, the first step should always be pray to God. Pray to God. But we pray to our God, and because of them, now what's the next thing they're going to do? Take some action. So again, we see this pattern. When you have opposition, pray to God and then do something. Pray to God, but do something. Don't wait for God. So, well, I'm just going to wait for God to take care of it. You know, and if he doesn't take care of it, I guess that's a sign we're not supposed to do it. No, pray to God, give as much wisdom you can, but then do something. So they set up a guard against them day and night. Is that going to take a lot more manpower?
Yes.
Yeah, a lot more energy, because it's really problematic now. Now we have to have guards. But is it going to give some assurance to the people? Yes, because you know someone's got your back. So we set up a night. Thus in Judah it was said. This is interesting, because the strength of the burden bearers is failing. Yet there's much rubbish, and we are unable to rebuild the wall. So I don't think necessarily these verses are so much connected, because this seems to be a next step in their progress, or lack of it, in building the wall. They're getting fatigued, discouraged, maybe exhausted, and just want to quit. Because what does it say? The strength is failing. This is hard. So maybe they're right on day 36. You're wiped out. It's hard. And there's rubbish everywhere. And here's what they're saying. We're unable to rebuild the wall. That's doubt, isn't it? When you start doubting you can do it, that's when Satan's got you and you will probably quit. When you start doubting you'll be successful or God's going to bless you, that's when you're most likely just to stop. This is a very serious, this may be the bottom of the trough, but this is a serious moment. That's when a lot of things in, relationships, marriages, churches, all sorts of things, is because of this point right here. So what happens? We're going to see that. Well, let me ask this question, because I did want to ask it, that's why I put that up there. In what way is discouragement the opposite of faith? Because they're discouraged now, aren't they? They got to have people guarding them. They're tired. They're just rubbish everywhere. How is discouragement really the opposite of faith? Go ahead.
Well, discouragement really comes from you realizing that you can't, of yourself, do anything.
Okay. Okay, if you didn't hear that, that's exactly right. We are unable. Our strength's failing. And so discouragement is looking to self rather than looking to God. Yes, so it's really the opposite of faith in that way.
Discouragement
yes.
takes away from hope.
Yes.
While faith builds it,
okay.
Faith is the substance of those things. Hope for faith builds.
That's right.
Whereas discouragement eats it away.
That's right. Because when you faith God, I'm going to say trust him there, it keeps your encouragement up when you're trusting him. But when faith fails or trust starts to diminish, you get discouraged. You want to quit, right? So discouragement, discourage, right? That's what it means, to take the courage out of you. And when you take the courage out of you, what happens? You quit. You give in to the threats. This is a scary time right here. So look what happens. Our enemy said, here's the response. This is why they're discouraged. They will not know or see until we come among them. Kill them, put a stop to the work. Now, I think this is a picture of their terrorist attack plan. In other words, they will know when we're coming because we're going to sneak in among them. And while they're working, we'll kill a bunch of them and then we'll run away. Now, isn't that the goal of terrorists today? To hit you when you least expect it, so they can disrupt your lifestyle so you do not do things as normally before. It's very effective, and that's where they're starting, or they're going to do. It's interesting, this is in the Middle East too, isn't it? So when the Jews who lived near them came and told us 10 times. Now, why is that listed 10 times? Is this a problem for Nehemiah and the leaders? Well, who's coming and telling Nehemiah this? So he gets one report. We don't want to go to work today. Why? Because they're going to kill us. And then we don't want to go to work today. Well, why? Because they got a plan to come and kill us. And so, yes, it's not just once. It's not twice. This is spreading throughout the whole group, right? See the problem? 10 times. Whether it was actually 10 or not, it was a complete number, like you said. All right? They will come up against us from every place where you may turn. So now, fear and death. It's actually we're going to kill them, and then that produces fear, and that paralyzes. Okay, Wayne had it first. Thanks.
Quickly, didn't Nehemiah have, spies, but informers?
Mm-hmm. And that's a good observation that how did they learn about this? That there were faithful Jews among them that reported this back to Nehemiah's leadership. So they were like spies. That's the only way they heard this. Unless the only other conclusion would be they're spreading this out just to discourage the people ahead of time. You know, but yes, Heather.
I actually realize I have a comment for verse 13.
You're ahead of me? All right. Okay, well, let's look at that. Here's some of the possible options Nehemiah could have just done nothing, or panicked, or this is what he's going to do is what? Trust God. So let's look at verse 13 that Heather mentioned. Now, I'm not reading anymore because we're almost out of time, so I want to see this. So this, what does he do? It doesn't say he prayed this time, but can we assume that he's always been praying?
Yes.
But now he's going to take action. He stationed men in the lowest parts of the space behind the wall, the exposed places. I stationed the people and families with their swords, spears, and bows. And when I saw their fear, and I pointed out, we're in one of these ebbs, right? This is a real problem. He sees it. Just like it says they were demoralized, here it says they're afraid. So we don't want to overstate it, but we certainly don't want to minimize it. He says, I rose and spoke to the nobles, the officials, the rest of the people. So we're going to get the leadership, and we're going to work through them to get them to lead them and encourage them. And what is this statement? I think this is a synopsis. It's not the whole thing, but what is the message? Do not be afraid. But what? Remember. Where does he turn the attention back to? When we get afraid, we forget about God, don't we? We forget about the awesome God who delivers, who fights for us, who is our rock and our salvation. We fail to remember that He created all things. He's in charge of all things. He can make walls come down. He can surely empower you to build this wall back up. Right? So that's a really interesting message. It wasn't complicated. Don't be afraid. Well, how am I going to displace my fear? Remember God. Remember who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers. Now that's interesting. Family, connection, having each other's back, interdependent on each other. All right? Yeah.
Were the books of Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, 1st and 2nd Kings available to Nehemiah? Had he read the accounts of what had happened before? Had come before him, like Moses and David and that? And was this why it was so instilled in him to do exactly what they had done? Because this was historically correct.
Yeah. I can't answer that specifically because, like Hezekiah, they found the book of the law there. So there were times it was not with them and times it was, but I'm sure he was aware of the stories, whether he actually had access to them or not.
It's almost a quote of what these brave men did before him.
John said it's a quote. That's why this one is very important. Here's the recording. He said to Josaphat, don't be afraid, right? Because this vast army, the battle's not yours. Whose is it?
God.
He told the Israelites through prophet, don't be afraid. Why? I'm with you. He told Daniel, don't be afraid. All right? And what did he tell Paul? We're in the New Testament. When he's fearful for his life, he says, don't be afraid any longer. What does that mean Paul was doing? He's fearful. He says, go on speaking and don't be silent, because I got many people in this city. 77 times when I looked it up today, the phrase, don't be afraid, is found in the Bible. Most of them in the Old Testament. What's the message?
Don't be afraid.
If you don't want to be afraid, what? Remember God. Remember God. Stop looking to ourselves. Start looking to Him. All right? Yeah, that's right. So remember, Lord, great scripture to memorize. Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 14. Remember the great and awesome God and fight for your families, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your homes. And if we don't fight for our children, no one else will. Our school's going to take them. The world's going to take them. Entertainment's going to take them. Society's going to try to corrupt them. If we don't fight for each other, I don't know who will. Right? So when the enemies heard that it was known to us, and here's what's interesting, he prays to God, takes action. But he says God frustrated their plan. God frustrated it. Because they're remembering God. And then all of us what? Return to the work. After prayer, get back to work. God's not going to bless those that don't work. Okay, we're going to stop right there. Any comments?
Yeah, God answers their prayer.
Yeah, He does. Now, we'll see next week the shovel and the spear. You're one hand holding a spear, the other one with a mortar, you know, or a, what's the word I'm looking for? A trowel. That's what it is. A trowel.